So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was lost. So wake me up when it's all over.
Welcome to Sunny in Seattle with your host, Sunny Joy. And coming up on today's show, Sunny will be interviewing Dr. Tom Hutton, a retired neurologist, and the two of them will be discussing about his wonderful book, Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales, which actually chronicles his life as a physician and his patients who faced major illness with grace, grit, and dignity. And now I welcome your host for the day, Sunny Joy.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Sunny in Seattle. I'm your host, attorney-turned-life coach, Sunny Joy McMillan. We're here every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. KKNW, bringing you amazing coaches, teachers, authors, and healers who are on a mission to encourage you, inspire you, and give you tools to live a life filled with peace, joy, freedom, and purpose. It is radio that positively shines. If you can't catch us live, you can always access the show archives, which are found at 1150kknw.com. You can also connect with me via Facebook, and I'm there by my name. And I also have a show page that we use where we post upcoming guest links, and so you guys know what to expect on the show every Friday. You can also find out more about me and connect with me for coaching through my website, which is goldenoversoul.com. And come see me for coaching at my office in the U District. And I was just telling Benny, it was my last day at East West Bookshop coaching yesterday.
Yay! And aww.
Yeah, it was very bittersweet.
Yeah, right?
East West just really took me in and made me a part of the family there, and was instrumental in helping me reach clients and get a lot of practice when I was still in training, and it just was wonderful. But I'll still be around teaching classes.
Well, yeah, you can't travel far, especially from East West. They love you so much.
I love them so much. The feeling is mutual. So for those of you out there, if you never did come see me at East West for coaching, because for a long time there I was offering either free coaching or a discounted rate for my East West guests. But what I will tell you guys is that at my office in the University District, I am always have available a limited number of discovery sessions where you can come in and you can check out coaching. And those are always complimentary. And if you're interested, go to my website, goldenoversoul.com, and just reach out to me through the contact form there or my email address, which is posted there. And you can apply for one of those free discovery sessions to see if coaching is right for you and if it's a good fit to work with me as a coach. So let's see, what else? Benny, anything new going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Big WSU weekend. We have Colorado. Of course, next week is Apple Cup, so that's pretty big for the state. Well, that's right. You're from not around
here.
No,
I don't know
Apple
Cup.
I must refresh your memory.
I know the Rose Bowl, and that's about it.
Well, one of us might still have a chance to go to that. So it's a pretty big game next weekend. But other than that, I mean, just kind of like hanging out, doing the thing. There's nothing that much more on the plate. So
will you be here next week for Thanksgiving?
Yes, I will be working.
Okay.
But that's good because I can get kind of some stuff done, and then I'll go see family stuff afterwards.
Awesome. Okay.
Well, knock it all out.
Sounds good.
And Black Friday's next week, too.
Yes. Okay.
If you're into that.
I'm not, but for those listeners out there who need a reminder.
Right.
Okay. So let's see. As far as events go, I want to let you guys know about something that I'll be doing starting in January 2017, and that is leading a book club on Anita Morjani's latest book, What If This Is Heaven? And for those of you out there who aren't familiar with Anita, she has one of the most incredible near-death experience stories, I think, that is out there today. I mean, it definitely rivals Dr. Eben Alexander's. And so you guys can find out more about that by reading her first book, which is Dying to Be Me. And she also has a great radio show on Hay House Radio. She's just a really neat lady. And hopefully we'll be bringing her on because she'll be here in Seattle in April 2017. So you can go ahead and get your tickets for that if you want to get ahead on purchasing those. So East West asked me to lead a book club on this, and it will be a 10-week book club starting on January 3rd. That's a Tuesday, and we'll meet every week on Tuesday through March 7th, and it'll be from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Tuesdays at East West Bookshop. You don't have to register for all 10 classes. You can drop in and drop out, and the reason we're doing 10 weeks is because the book contains 10 myths, and these are 10 cultural myths that Anita feels pretty strongly are keeping us from experiencing heaven on earth, basically. So if that sounds interesting to you, I will go ahead and let you know so you can check out the book and see if you want to sign up. And then also the final thing I want to mention before we bring on our guest today is that it is annual survey time around KKNW. And this is the survey of listeners.
Yeah. Only one excited.
Hey, I'm excited too.
Yeah.
No, it's a good thing. And this is, I still participate in the survey. I did when I was just a listener. Now I do it as a listener and a host. And
I bet I know what show you're voting for. if there's an opportunity to.
I will definitely vote for my show, but there are many others that I vote for too.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
That's what's there.
And it gives you a chance. The reason we do this is because it's a way to let station management know about your favorite shows, what you like and don't like, so that we can shape what we're offering for you guys. And it helps me know, you know, who's out there listening, and it helps the other hosts know, and so that you get the programming that you guys really want to hear. And so to participate in the survey, just go to 1150kknw.com, click on the words 2016 listener survey that's near the top of the page, and fill out that survey. And here's your incentive to do so. If it wasn't enough what we just said, go and fill out the survey, because when you do, you will be entered for a chance to win $400 in gift certificates to Quinault Beach Resort and Casino at Ocean Shores, as well as $100 in gift certificates to the Melting Pot Restaurant, which is a favorite of mine. So
now I know why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I'll fill out that survey. Okay, so encourage you guys to fill out the survey, and it's running through December 5th, so not that much longer. So go ahead and fill out those surveys. Okay, so very excited to bring on my guest today. And I know Dr. Hutton because he is a dear family friend. My family, as many of you guys know, is in Texas. And so I was really impressed when I heard that Dr. Hutton had written a book. And I'm thinking, okay, he's a very, very well-known doctor internationally. And I'm thinking, so can he be a really good writer? And I read the book, and sure enough, he is. It was a fabulous book, and we'll be discussing it today. It's called Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales. And so I'll just let you know a little bit about Tom before we bring him on. He is a doctor who began with Texas Tech in 68 for his bachelor's degree, went on to do his MD in 1972 from Baylor College of Medicine. During his fellowship, he studied neuropsychology at the University of Moscow with the eminent academician A.R. Luria. Tom also holds a Ph.D. from the University of Minnesota in neuropsychology and behavioral neurology. His professional career was split between academic medicine and private practice. He served on the faculty of the University of Minnesota Department of Neurology as a staff physician at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, where he was assistant chief of neurology. And following a move to Texas, Tom became a tenured professor of the Department of Medical and Surgical Neurology at the Texas Tech School of Medicine. He became internationally known for his work in Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease. His major research interest toward the conclusion of his career was the topic of Adolf Hitler's Parkinson's disease, and I cannot wait to talk to Tom about this one. Tom created a stir at an international neurology meeting in Vancouver, Canada, when he described the impact of Durfuer's chronic disease and the effect that it had on his thought processes and how Parkinson's inadvertently aided the Allies in the Battle of Normandy. Tom's insights quickly spread worldwide, leading to TV programs and widespread press coverage. Tom has published 8 professional books and over 100 articles and chapters to his credit. He's received numerous honors and awards, including the highest given by the Texas Tech Health Sciences, as well as serving as advisor to the Office of Governor and receiving a Texas Senate resolution for his service to Texas in the field of aging and Alzheimer's disease. His first popular book, which we'll be discussing today, is Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales. And he's currently working on his second book, tentatively titled Retiring the Black Bag. And he lives now with his wife, Trudy, of 47 years, on a cattle ranch outside of Fredericksburg, Texas. And in his words, life in retirement is sweet. You can connect with him and find out more about him through his website, which is tomhuttonmd.com. He's also on Facebook, and you can get the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Texas Tech University Press, as well as through his website. Dr. Hutton, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sonny. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and it's always fun to have guests who are from faraway places, and this one is dear to my heart since my family and friends are there, so we're excited to have a Texan on the show with us.
Thank you, and I'm so glad you liked the book.
Oh, it was wonderful, and I got to say, for those listeners out there, I really had a hard time putting the book down because it had, I just couldn't believe the kind of cases you were dealing with. Like, I didn't know there was so much variety and that it would be kind of like solving mysteries to diagnose some of these people who came in with really strange symptoms and strange disorders. So, just to start with, you were supposed to be an attorney, and I'm curious how you then ended up going on to become a physician as well as the specialty of neurology. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd be pleased to, Sonny. It was an accident. My parents had seen me as the family lawyer, and the strapping 16-year-old, 155-pound football player, I ended up having my thumb broken by the 230-pound senior linebacker, and this laid me up quite a bit, and I was in the doctor's office for about the next 3 weeks. As it turned out, the fragments didn't set very well, and he kept having to take the cast off and re-break it and reset it and re-x-ray it, and did this three or four times before the doctor was satisfied. And that was the bad part, but the really good part was that I stayed in his office for these procedures for the 3 weeks, and I got to watch Dr. Powell and his nurse operate. And after a while, he realized how bored I must be sitting there reading these old magazines. And so he asked if I would like to trail him from room to room and visit with his patients. And this, for me, was an eye-opening experience, not only because I met some wonderful people, some wonderful patients who told me their stories, but I saw how an experienced clinician could work and how he could tease out their stories and how he could relate to each one individually and somehow, pouring through a maze of verbiage, find just the key symptoms and signs that made the diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I thought this was magic. Suddenly my whole interest in professions changed.
Yeah, and one of the things that stood out to me about Dr. Powell, not only how kind he was to really take you under his wing and let you shadow him, but I was floored when I read the story about Eddie May. And because it just seemed his approach was so progressive, and I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit about that, what the influence of that particular case had to your life and the trajectory of your career.
Well, yes, I remember Eddie May. She was an elderly lady who actually wasn't nearly as old as she looked, gray-haired, her hair back in a tight bun, very soft voice, avoided eye contact. And it was clear to Dr. Powell that she was suffering depression. And he was able to tease out the symptoms, even though she was somewhat reticent to tell her story. But it was a bad marriage that she was suffering from. And she was going around shopping various symptoms and easily could have had unnecessary surgeries or taken unnecessary medicine. But Dr. Powell recognized that her problem was sadness, was depression, was lack of being able to connect to anyone and talk about her problem.
Yeah.
And as busy as this general surgeon was, he took time to discuss this with her and showed just a very interesting technique, which essentially said that he liked her, that he was her friend, and allowed her to open up. And so he became, in a way, the medicine. Instead of prescribing a medicine, he was the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the dramatic impact that it had on Eddie May's life. Something, an example that stayed with me, and in fact I used many times throughout my career.
Yeah, and he even had gave her placebo pills, which she said were improving her condition, even though she had no idea that they were only sugar pills. She actually was responding quite well to that treatment.
That's right, Sonny. He gave these placebos for her complaints of abdominal upset, and she thought they were marvelous, whereas, in fact, what she was responding to was his kindness and his sensitivity, rather than risk giving her some medicine that almost certainly would have had some side effects for her.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I don't know how much my parents told you about this show and this station, but we love to hear stories like that about the power of positivity and our thinking and the connection that we have with others. And I just was so impressed that Dr. Powell out in West Texas during that time period was already doing that. So what a wonderful mentor to have.
He was. He really opened up a lot for me and changed the direction I was headed.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we're at the point where we can take our first break. I want to let you guys know out there, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Tom Hutton, my guest today, if you have questions about anything we're talking about or about neurology in general, this is a great person to ask. The number for the station is 888-298-5569. That's 888-298-5569. We'll take our first break, and when we come back, we will continue talking to Tom about his career as a physician and some more very interesting stories of the cases that he studied and that he completed while he was still practicing. You're listening to Sunny in Seattle. We'll be back in just a few.
You know, East West Bookshop is one of Seattle's most loved independent bookstores, serving the community's mind, body, and spirit since 1989. Well, they've moved to a new location just above Whole Foods at 6407 12th Avenue Northeast in Seattle. And now they have even more space for spiritual-oriented products and a full monthly schedule of events and lectures with an emphasis on helping you to know yourself. Rediscover the new expanded East West Bookshop. For further information, go to EastWestBookshop.com.
Hi, I'm Eric Ryder, Operations Manager for Alternative Talk 1150. We value your opinion and invite you to visit 1150KKNW.com to fill out the 2016 Alternative Talk Listener Survey. Your responses help us shape Alternative Talk to your listening needs. And as a bonus, just by filling out the survey, you'll have a chance to win a prize pack featuring certificates from Quinault Beach Resort and Casino at Ocean Shores and the Melting Pot Restaurant. Complete contest details can be found at 1150kknw.com. So log on now.
My life just isn't working. Why can't I get ahead in business? My clothes aren't fitting. How come I'm not in a loving relationship? Any of this sound familiar to you? Sounds like you need smarter living. Hello, I'm Elizabeth Foster, founder of Connector Coach, and I can help you. Our team of highly qualified expert coaches are ready to start working with you today, so you can achieve your goals. And by using our unique coach match system, you'll be connected with the perfect coach, so you can master your everyday life and business challenges, get results faster, and start smarter living. Call us today on 800-608-2030 or find us on the web at connectorcoach.com. Again, that's 800-608-2030. Don't waste any time. Connect a coach for smarter living.
Have you ever felt like you were meant for something more? The truth is, you are. Life is not to be endured, it is to be lived. Live your life fully and with purpose. Join me, Holly Holmquist, day minister, spiritual mentor, and the host of Open Conversations, Sundays at 3 p.m. If you want to live your authentic life, let me and my fascinating guests inspire you. Join Open Conversations Sundays from 3 to 4 on KKNW Alternative Talk 1150. That's Sundays at 3 p.m. Join the conversation.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk 1150 a.m.
Welcome back to Sunny in Seattle. I'm your host, Sunny Joy. I'm here today with Dr. Tom Hutton, a retired neurologist who has written a wonderful book called Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales. And this would make a wonderful holiday gift for any friends and family you have out there. It's entertaining, it's heartwarming, and really interesting. So Tom, we've got several callers on the line, actually, who would love to speak with you. And I thought, why don't we go ahead and we'll take our first caller. And for those of you also hanging out on the line, thank you so much for your patience. And we'll chat with Tom a little bit, and then we'll take your calls. So first on the line, we've got Ron Jay from Fredericksburg, Texas. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I wanted to tell you, I didn't have a question for Dr. Hutton, but I did want to say I have read that book twice now, and I found that it was very insightful, poignant, and entertaining as well. I found that he was a master of words when he was describing his patient's history, and wanted to thank him for writing such an entertaining book.
Yes, I had the similar experience, Ron, and I have to say I was laughing out loud at certain points, and I thought, wow, I knew Dr. Hutton through my parents, and there were just certain aspects of his personality I did not know about, and I was like, whoa, Dr. Hutton, I had no idea.
I love the story about the dogs playing pinochle.
Oh, we're going to get to it. Well, you know what? Let's get to it.
Why not?
Okay. So, Ron, thank you so much for calling in, and we're going to have Tom tell the story of the dogs playing pinochle. Okay, Dr. Hutton, do you mind sharing that story since we're on the topic?
Oh, of course, Sonny. I'd love to. I think it's perhaps one of my favorite stories in the book. This happened shortly after we returned from Minnesota, and I joined the faculty at the Texas Tech School of Medicine. And I remember going into an exam room. There was this little gnomish-looking man sitting on the table, and he was very, very guarded. And he did have Parkinson's disease. And so the good part of the exam was spent trying to establish some rapport. And it must have worked because before it was over, he began to describe that he was indeed seeing things that weren't really there. And he gave this fascinating description, one of the most vivid hallucination descriptions I've ever heard, of how every afternoon in his rather lonesome farmhouse west of Muleshoe, how three dogs would come into his farmhouse, and they would play pinochle with him. And he would talk about his preparations and setting up the table and putting out some dog biscuits and all, and how these dogs were dressed and how they managed to play pinochle, or how they watched television with him and watched the Cowboys play. And I just thought this was fascinating. But at the same time, Sonny, this really presented a dilemma for me, being new in the faculty at the School of Medicine. He had hallucinations. Most of the time we adjust the medicines and try to get rid of the hallucinations, first thing. But it was clear that these were not threatening to him. In fact, they had a beneficial effect. And he was enjoying his role as putting on pinochle parties each afternoon. So it caused me some consternation and some real decision-making as to what to do. I'm not sure I should finish the story. Maybe I should leave it to the readers if they want to read the book. But it was one of those times where sometimes your medical learning conflicts with what you feel as a human being, and you end up going with what you think the patient's needs really are.
Yeah, and I will say, just for those of you out there, that this particular patient made a reappearance later in the book, and it was a pretty funny little romance story that he had with another one of Dr. Hutton's patients. Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, so, Ron, I think we lost you, but thank you so much for the call and for your kind words about the book. I couldn't agree with you more, and we really just appreciate the call. So, Dr. Hutton, we actually have a couple more callers on the line. So let's go ahead and we'll take Cecil from Bloomington, Minnesota. Thank you for calling, Cecil. How can we help you today?
Well, I'm from Minnesota, and I have had a chance to read Dr. Hutton's book and really enjoyed it. Great stories. And one of the stories was about the birth of his son in a snowstorm in Minneapolis, and that really touched me because I've lived through a lot of those snowstorms and really appreciate the high tension that brought. I do have a question.
Yes, please.
I'm at an age where I spend more and more time in my doctor's office, and in reading Dr. Hutton's book and hearing about the patient-doctor relationship. And then going to my doctors, who have a very sincere interest in my health and dealing with the little issues that I have. But they seem to spend more and more time staring at their computer screen instead of interacting with me. And I'm wondering if Dr. Hutton has any observations about the change in medicine that seems to be occurring.
That's a great question, Cecil. Yeah, please, Tom, speak to that.
Well, I think Cecil has experienced the same thing that many of us have, the increased emphasis on the insurance companies directing care and the limitation in time has caused many doctors to spend more time typing in their electronic medical records, checking the various diagnostic boxes they need to check in order to be paid, rather than focusing on the patient, teasing out their symptoms. I do believe the electronic medical records are overall a very good thing. They're good for looking at large amounts of data from a scientific point of view and perhaps for billing. But in terms of establishing an effective patient-doctor relationship, I think that they're lacking. And so I only hope that we don't lose in medicine the importance of the doctor and the patient establishing rapport, being able to focus on the patient's concerns, being able to spend time examining the patient, not just tapping on the keys. Yeah. So I do have a concern. That is something that has changed over my career as a physician, and I think that's one area that's got some drawbacks.
You know, Dr. Hutton, I'm curious, as patients, for Cecil, for myself, for anyone else out there listening, is there anything that you can suggest that we can do as patients to help not let that happen, not have it be just, the doctor staring at the computer screen and the insurance companies taking over the care? What can we do?
Sonny, I know some doctors have hired a transcription to sit there and tap on the keys so the doctor can examine and look more at the patient. Now, that's an extra cost, obviously, mm-hmm. that isn't borne. I think just trying to impress upon the doctor, to be brief, to have thought through what you want to tell the doctor so that the time doesn't become squeezed too greatly, I think that's always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But then you might just look at them and say, would you mind sharing some of your attention with me right now? I think doctors are painfully aware of this. They don't like it, but it's pretty much what they're being forced to do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you so much. And so, Cecil, does that answer your question?
It does. I have another one if you would take two.
Yeah, sure. Let's
quickly, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
And Karen in Bellevue, hang on. We'll get to you soon. Okay, so Cecil, okay. What have you got?
Well, I really enjoyed the part about Hitler and the effect of Parkinson on Hitler and his decision-making. And I know there were some questions in this last election about health. And I was just wondering, I think back about so many of our presidents who had health issues that affected their presidency. And I was wondering if Dr. Hutton had any opinions on how much health information should we be seeking from our candidates and our presidents.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Okay. Thank you.
Well, that is a thought-provoking question, and certainly FDR had his problems with polio, and then he died of a stroke that may actually have been secondary to a metastatic malignant melanoma to the brain.
Oh.
Joseph Stalin had the clinically diagnosed paranoid syndrome, which certainly affected his behavior and negatively affected millions of people. Adolf Hitler, as Cecil brought up, I think it's well accepted now that he suffered from Parkinson's disease,
mm-hmm.
and that this slowed up his movements and caused tremor. In fact, it kind of kept him from being in close contact with the German people the last 4 or 5 years that he was in power. His voice became soft. He couldn't get on the radio and have the old masterful voice that was so effective early on. But the part that I was particularly interested in my research had to do with his behavioral changes. And we do know that people have Parkinson's disease for long periods of time, and we use 10 years as the cutoff, that there is an impact on what's called executive functioning. That is, their ability to come up with new ideas, ideas to change from one topic to another. And there's several other neuropsychological symptoms that go with this. But we think that this affected Adolf Hitler in that he was unable to, for example, at the Battle of Normandy, to recognize that that really was the battle that was coming in at Normandy. It wasn't a feint. The Allies had given a lot of misinformation that the battle was going to come at the Pas-de-Calais, and Adolf Hitler became convinced of that to the extent that even his generals and the soldiers at the front were requesting reinforcements, could not convince him otherwise, and it took into the third day before he actually released the reinforcements to go to Normandy. By then, the battle was lost, the second front was established, and probably the conclusion of World War II was determined. I think that was a result of the executive dysfunction suffered by Adolf Hitler, along with some very effective propaganda.
Yeah, that, and I had no idea. I guess it's because of your research and because now it's been included in several television programs and documentaries that this is an idea that definitely has taken hold. And there's the chapter in the book is really interesting with you showing photographs of certain hand positions that he would keep a hand on his belt or always be holding something, and also the changes in his signature over the course of 10 years. Just so much evidence of the progression of that disease. I had no idea, and I also didn't know that Parkinson's really would affect mental acuity. So that was, fascinating to think that that could have shaped how that particular battle came down. Cecil, thank you so much for calling in and for those really thought-provoking questions. We appreciate it. So, Dr. Hutton, we do have another caller on the line, and she's been waiting. So I'd say, let's go ahead and take that call. Karen from Bellevue, thank you for calling.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Hi, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Hi, thanks for this. I have a friend who actually has migraines and has for 25 years and been pretty much just prescribed different medicine. I just was wondering if Dr. Tommy would know any other options besides this or something that you've seen along the way.
For migraine treatment?
For migraine treatment,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, yes, yeah. Dr. Hutton, what do you have to say on that one?
Well, certainly, yes, migraine is one of those conditions that neurologists spend a lot of time treating, and there's sort of the classical migraine that there's a variety of tablets trying to prevent the headache, especially if you have the warning before. There's time to get a tablet in that will prevent the throbbing, nauseating headache that comes on that is so debilitating and may put a person to bed for the rest of the day. But at the same time, there's some diagnostic issues that make sure, in fact, it is migraine. The first thing the neurologist will do is to go through the process, make sure it's not some other type of headache or a mixture of headaches that might also respond to other things like biofeedback or relaxation techniques, occasionally nerve blocks that can be dealt with without having to take medicine. The typical migraine, if it's frequent enough, though, there are a variety of medicines these days that can be taken on a regular basis to largely prevent them from occurring. And that's the best thing, if you can prevent it from occurring, because it is so debilitating. So I certainly don't know about your friend's headaches, but I bet she's in good hands there. They have some good neurologists in the Seattle area, and hopefully they're going to be able to give her the relief. Actually, migraine tends to go away as we age, so we can always hope that she's going to so-called grow out of it.
Yeah.
I hope she does well.
Yes, Karen, does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling in. And for any of those out there who would now like to talk to Dr. Hutton, we've had a number of wonderful callers today. The number here at the station is 888-298-5569. That's 888-298-5569. So, Dr. Hutton, we're actually at the point where we can take our final break. And When we come back, I would love to hear more stories from the book, and we can talk a little bit more about some of your research. You are listening to Sunny in Seattle. I'm here today speaking with Dr. Tom Hutton, a retired neurologist. We're talking about his book, Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales, and we will be back in just a few.
Hello, my name is Marie Manucherry. I'm an energy intuitive author and host of Where Energy and Medicine Meet. During the show, I answer callers' questions, intuitively, of course, and provide invaluable guidance. I also interview others who I believe are on the leading edge of thought. Tune in on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on 1150 a.m. in Seattle or live wherever you are at energyintuitive.com.
Alternative Talk 1150. We're on your radio at 1150 a.m. We're on your HD radio at 98.9 channel 3.
So many ways to listen.
We're on the web at 1150kknw.com. Streaming live audio and video as well as MP3 archives of many of our shows.
So many ways to listen.
And now, we're on your smartphone or tablet. Download our free app in the Apple App Store or Google Play and take Alternative Talk 1150 anywhere you go.
So many ways to listen.
In my quest for the gold medal, I had to overcome not only the toughest competition, but also a lot of pain. I'm Carrie Strug, and I know firsthand how pain can impact your life. What I did not know is that factors like age, pre-existing health conditions, and other medicines can increase the risk of certain over-the-counter pain relievers. That's why it's important to always check the Drug Facts label on your medicine to see if your pain reliever is still a good fit for you.
A public service of the U.S. Pain Foundation with support from McNeil Consumer Healthcare. Visit GetReliefResponsibly.com.
Hi, I'm attorney-turned-life coach Sunny Joy, host of Sunny in Seattle. I invite you to join me every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. KKNW. Each week, I'll be bringing you amazing coaches, authors, and healers who are on a mission to encourage you, inspire you, and give you tools to live a life filled with joy, peace, freedom, and purpose. I look forward to connecting with you every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. Sunny in Seattle, radio that positively shines.
Seattle, Tacoma, Antwerp? That's right. We're streamed worldwide on our app and on the web at 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to Sunny in Seattle. I'm your host, Sunny Joy. I'm here today with Dr. Tom Hutton, a retired neurologist who has written a lovely book called Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales. It would make a wonderful holiday gift for any friends and family you have out there. And you can get that at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Texas Tech University Press, and through Dr. Hutton's website, which is TomHuttonMD.com. So we had some wonderful callers before we took our last break. Thank you for all of you who called in. That really makes the show fun, and I love having people interacting and reminding me of some of the material that wasn't even in my outline today. So, Tom, I would like to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that I didn't know about Parkinson's, and I do that because I think that it's good for our callers to be aware of some of the things that maybe a family or friend is going through when they have these disorders or diseases that you saw coming through your practice. And I just will mention, so my partner's uncle passed away within the last several weeks, and he had Parkinson's. And I noticed in the book, I should grab it out of my briefcase. I didn't put it on the desk here, but it was something to the effect of when you watched some of these Parkinson's patients that you had go downhill, and when they would finally transition, you use the analogy of like pushing the chips all in a poker game. And I will tell you that Chase's uncle, who passed recently, for the memorial service, he was an avid card player. And for the service, Chase had these playing cards made that had a picture of his uncle Les and a picture of him at the poker table, and on the bottom of the cards it says all in. And I thought, oh, that was just such a lovely I don't know if I want to call it a coincidence, but a serendipity perhaps, that was the exact wording that you used in how you described watching your patients transition with this disease. So for those of us out there who aren't quite familiar with it, like there are things that I learned, like that hallucinations can be a part of it, that there are other mental effects that I didn't realize. What do listeners and the folks out there need to know about Parkinson's so they can have more awareness?
Well, of course, most people, Sonny, think of it as a movement disorder, which it is. And, of course, people move more slowly. Their muscles are stiff. They tend to tremor. Not all have tremors, but it's the most obvious sign of Parkinson's disease. But in addition, it also can affect, particularly as it becomes more chronic, how a person walks. And this can be very disturbing to people. They may try to walk across the room, and they tend to have little short shuffling steps. But then they get stuck, and they refer to it as freezing episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be really bothersome to people, and they have to learn tricks, techniques to try to break their freeze. Like somebody puts your foot in front of them and they'll step over the foot, gives them some target, or they pick a crack out on the floor and they step to that crack to break the freeze. Now, this is a disturbing aspect. Short-term memory certainly is affected. Earlier, we talked a little bit about the executive dysfunction, which really isn't that evident, except when you do some testing of a person. It's really not something... anything at all like Alzheimer's disease, for example, where it really affects all of the cognitive and memory functions.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, in certain situations, it can affect their ability. And so we need to be somewhat aware of possible cognitive aspects.
Mm-hmm.
The hallucinations are something that I was particularly interested in. So often hallucinations will take the form of being an angel, being something very positive. And in this case, I shared a number of stories in the book about how people looked at these as their guardian angels and how they played beneficial roles in their lives. On the other hand, sometimes they take on a very demonic look to them and can be very frightening. I described one man who, his wife called me when they were holed up in a local motel in Lubbock, because they'd been driven out of their house by these little people that were so gnarly and ugly and threatening to them that they had to flee. At least he had to flee, and his wife went along with his hallucination.
Yeah.
In that case, certainly, it's a medical emergency. We put him in the hospital and were able, fortunately, to get rid of his hallucination.
Yeah. And I loved the story that you mentioned earlier about the gentleman who would have the three dogs visit every day to play pinochle, and your decision about how to perhaps another doctor might have just said, oh, this is not good. We need to change the medication or the dosage. And that you were so understanding of how encouraging these hallucinations were for the gentleman that you took a little bit of a different approach. And I thought that was lovely. It reminded me so much throughout the book of your approach, which began in the very beginning, all the way to the end of the book, that you really listened to your patients in a way that maybe not all of us have experienced with our own doctors. I fortunately have one here who that's all she does. I think it's fantastic. But can you speak to that a little bit about the importance of really that connection and having a good bedside manner with your patients?
Well, yes, Sonny, I believe strongly that we need to first listen to our patients. And I mean listen in a very thorough way. And we need to watch them. We need to listen what their words are saying and what they're meaning. In neurology, we especially need to do that because about 80% of the time when we make a diagnosis, we make it on the basis of what someone tells us. Maybe another 10% of the time we confirm it with our neurological examination, which is important, and then the rest may be made with various diagnostic imaging studies or blood tests. So that it's particularly important to be able to tease out these symptoms and get someone comfortable enough and be able to describe truly what it is that they're experiencing. I think that's part of medicine. I think being able to relate and to communicate with the patient is so important. Earlier we talked about how medicine has changed somewhat. We've become much more imaging intensive, but I hope we never lose this ability to communicate, because at least in neurology and many other areas, that's really where most of the diagnostic information can be determined, is by taking a careful medical history and doing a careful examination.
Yeah, and you really went beyond that even. I noticed there was one story that was just a page-turner, even more than the others, around the gentleman, Mr. Barnett, who came in with some pretty interesting symptoms, and you tracked him for years, going really doing some sleuthing with local police. And do you mind telling us a little bit about that story? Because that one just was crazy.
Well, yes, I'll never forget that story. It was. It started early on when I was just a resident, and this man came into the hospital and almost died from a terrible illness, where he was in the medical intensive care unit, and all organ systems were failing. And I didn't see him until many months later, when he was off on a chronic ward, and I was called to see him for what sounded like a very routine case of what's called peripheral neuropathy. The nerves going down to his feet were not working properly, and they were tingling and burning. And this led me to do an evaluation, and I guess just because I was very compulsive and ordered a bunch of tests, we ended up with a diagnosis of arsenic intoxication, one of the highest levels the Minnesota laboratory had ever recorded.
Oh, my gosh.
But once we determined that he had suffered and almost died from arsenic intoxication, or arsenic poisoning, we were no closer to finding out where it had come from. And that's why I started following him over the years, and kept coming back to the hospital with repeated bouts of arsenic intoxication. And so, and as you mentioned, Sonny, I ended up finally, I was obsessed with the case, I suspect, and doing all sorts of things, including going to the local police department and working with the local health department and searching through his house for sources of the arsenic. When finally, somewhat in desperation, because the spotlight kept falling on different people, maybe his wife and his wife, and he were separated but living in the same house, and she continued to do the cooking.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend that lived next door, who seemed to always be around when he got sick, and just all sorts of different things that were coming to mind, but we couldn't prove any of them.
Yeah.
And finally, what we ended up doing is... we had a psychiatrist who was consulting on our neurology service, and he did sodium pentothal, and we asked if maybe he would interview this man who was extremely bright, but at the same time extremely guarded. But under sodium pentothal, the answers came out, and how this man was in fact dosing himself with arsenic to try to maintain a chronic state of invalidism.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was crazy. I got to that part and I thought, oh, okay, I did not see that coming.
Nor did I.
Yeah, and because of your, I'm trying to remember, and if I get this wrong, forgive me, but that because of this particular case, it was from an ant poison that's no longer on the market, and was it partly because of this case that this particular kind of, or your research, something that you did that made it no longer possible that people could have this toxic substance in their home just to kill ants?
Yes, it was. There were a couple of substances out, which were basically arsenic and sucrose, table sugar, and the ants loved it, but also kids, particularly toddlers or just crawling infants, would get into it. And so I went to the Minnesota health department, and we came up with a fairly long series of arsenic intoxication. And I published this in two prominent medical journals, one being a shorter piece in the New England Journal of Medicine. And we really questioned whether or not this was beneficial when we considered the problems we're running into. Years later, I was called by, I think it was the Environmental Protection Agency, if I remember correctly. I had to go up to Washington, D.C. to testify. And what they were doing was looking at the whether or not they should keep this on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And after a long legal process,
they determined that these arsenic-containing insecticides should be taken off the market. And they may still be on the market with the same name, but they have different ingredients now. Safer ones.
Yeah, that just makes sense. If you can take care of the problem with something that's not toxic to children and humans, that's always a good thing.
It's interesting you mentioned the sleuthing, because I felt like so much of my career I was sleuthing. In fact, one of my great mentors, Alexander Romanovich Luria at the University of Moscow, when I asked him what was good preparation for becoming a neurologist and a neuropsychologist, he said, well, read all the mystery books you can.
Uh-huh.
The process is almost identical. You're looking for those clues that will lead you to the diagnosis or finding out who did it.
Yeah, and you certainly did that. And it's just following along with the stories in the book, it's really evident how much of that there really was, playing the detective. And I think also it says a lot about you. You were incredibly tenacious with making sure that you really were able to help clients by hanging in there until you could figure out what was really going on. And as we're getting to the end of the hour, I just want to make sure people know how to contact you. So if you want to know more about Dr. Hutton or purchase a copy of the book, you can go to TomHuttonMD.com and connect with him there. He's also on Facebook under Tom Hutton. And the book is Carrying the Black Bag, A Neurologist's Bedside Tales. That is available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Texas Tech University Press, and, of course, through Tom's website. You can connect with him and get a copy there. So I do have one final question, or as we're getting to the end of the show, just a couple more. I am fascinated by near-death experiences, and I had the absolute honor to interview Dr. Eben Alexander not too long ago about his experience, which is chronicled in his book, Proof of Heaven. And I'm curious, from your perspective as a neurologist, did you ever have any NDE cases, or what is your take on near-death experiences?
Yes, Sonny, I did. They were fairly rare, but yes, I did. I remember well one story, which is a fairly typical one, how this lady was dying of a severe infection, and everything went white, and everything became extremely peaceful, and she actually could see herself looking down at the bed where she was lying,
mm-hmm.
and she was drifting off. And then they were able to bring her back, and actually she had felt such peace that she didn't want to come back, but she realized that this wasn't her time. This seems to be a fairly typical phenomenon that these near-death experiences go through, but I can't throw a great deal of light on this. Dr. Alexander's book is an excellent book. As a neurologist, you have to assume that maybe there is some lack of blood flow to the brain that's giving rise to this sort of blinding light, and perhaps people have a state of mind at that point that... who knows? I interpret it better theologically than I can neurologically.
Right. That's kind of where we are. I think especially on this station and with this show and our interest, we love spirituality and metaphysics. So I'm interested on the scientific side, but as well as the theological side. Yeah, that's a fascinating experience. So for those people out there who might be curious about the book, what do you hope that readers will get from it?
I hope they'll develop a certain comfort level with perhaps if they develop some chronic illness. Let's face it, we're all going to die. And if we're lucky, we'll live into our old age, but there's a pretty good likelihood we'll be dealing with some sort of chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
The patients that I had the honor of describing in this book did it in a way that I think was very courageous. They showed us the importance that love played in their lives. They showed us the importance that hope played in their lives. And I think they can be very good models for all of us in the event that we go through something like this ourselves.
Yes, and it really, the stories in the book are so, they were just incredible. I was not expecting to have so much variety, and also to have you as a doctor tracking them with love, with hope, with connection, with listening. And just a beautiful example of what we, I think, can all hope for in our own physicians. So if you're not getting that experience with your doctor, I would say find one that's more like Dr. Hutton. So, Dr. Hutton, as we wrap up today, I just want to thank you so much for being a guest on Sunny in Seattle, all the way from Texas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I have thoroughly enjoyed this.
Well, I have too. We'll have to have you back on when your newest book, Retiring the Black Bag, comes out. You've been listening to Sunny in Seattle. Thank you guys so much for joining us. I will be off next week for Thanksgiving, but Benny will be here, and we will see you the following week. This is Sunny Joy signing off. So